wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
It's our Christmas special.
Yes.
You seem, you're like ready. You're like, yes.
Well, yeah, part one, you know, it's as usual, we're doing over two parts over the next couple of weeks. Really, like now, and then 2 weeks from now, the next part will be released. All so, part of a sort of a continuum.
So, a continuum of the holiday season for our listeners out there. This is our two-part gift to you all listeners.
That's right.
One of our specials.
They're very excited, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, I'm excited. I always like our specials.
Well, I know you're excited, and I'm excited, and you know,
I feel
other people's excitement.
Anytime we do a two-parter, I feel that you and I work harder to prepare. We are giving our listeners something beyond the norm. I think of our two-part summer movie preview. We did the three parts we did on the National Recording Registry, mm-hmm. two-part James Bond. I feel that these are like special events.
Yeah, well, I guess because usually in order to be two parts, you have to come up with something that's going to take that long, and so you have to actually prepare it. So once again, we're using a listing sort of format, so to speak, and we've done before, and some of this will be re-released over the holidays. We've done things about holiday songs and movies and stuff, so we couldn't do that all over again. So we picked one big holiday song as the anchor for our discussion.
Good way of putting it.
Yep. Which is?
The 12 Days of Christmas.
Right. Everybody knows the 12 Days of Christmas. Well, you know all the history because you did the research, right?
Well, I went to Wikipedia, yes.
Yeah.
You say everyone knows the 12 Days of Christmas. I'm going to challenge that assertion a little bit. I think everyone knows there's this song that talks about the 12 Days of Christmas. But in researching for the show, I suddenly realized other than Partridge in a Pear Tree, I only remember one or two of the others. What I mean is there seems to be a couple of references to different birds, something to do with Piper's piping. But if you took away my computer and my laptop and said to me, write out
the 12 days of Christmas,
I'd be done after about 4 days. I don't, you know, doves, birds, pipers, drummers.
I like when you said 4 days, I thought to my mind you'd be sitting there for 4 days trying to figure it out. You mean 4 days in the song.
4 days of the song, because the song is the 12 Days of Christmas. But I guess what we might as well do some big quick history.
Yeah.
The 12 Days of Christmas, the song, apparently goes back to the late 1700s. It was an English folk song. Apparently it was a chant. So what I'm saying is that, you know,
it didn't necessarily have the melodic kind of thing it does now.
The melody, apparently, yeah. There you go, yes. And you have a very tuneful voice today.
Yeah.
That melody showed up at the beginning of the 20th century. So that melody's only about 100 years old. So before that, I'm assuming people just went there and just yelled out, ducks are swimming, or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
I'm trying to think of how it would be. It's hard to think of a chant without thinking of the song.
I'm going
to
tell you right now, it said the song was it was performed without music as a chant or a rhyme.
But try and do that.
The 12 Days of Christmas.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be monotone, right? I mean, just think any chant.
A chant, isn't it? I mean, you're just going to randomly wander up and down the village going, six drummers drumming.
Yeah, maybe.
But even then, you'll notice my voice sort of wanted to revert to the tune.
1700s version of English.
I'm trying to.
First day of Christmas, true love gave to me.
But you're doing it, so you do it.
It's impossible to not end up having the melody to it.
So anyway, the melody showed up. And it is surprising, though, and I've just said to you that if you locked me in a room and told me to write out the 12 days worth of gifts.
Which I'm thinking of doing.
Locking me up or just making me write out the gifts?
Yeah, I mean, the second part's a benefit.
Looking at the history, it's amazing how little the song has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean is, basically, people have been giving each other these same crappy gifts for about 200 years.
Right.
Because basically it's some version of swans, geese. Although there is an old version, for example, I'm looking here.
Yeah, so Wikipedia has a chart, basically, that charts out the different variations and like what was on each day kind of thing.
I find this one most interesting. The 10th day of Christmas, it would appear, has had the most variation. Now, the current version is Piper's Piping.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also been given, or I have given my true love, ships are sailing.
That's
Lords are leaping have been moved around. Here's a cocks are crowing.
There you go.
Asses racing. So you take like that. That may be the.
And by that we don't mean offensive people.
The R-rated version.
Burrows or something. Yeah,
but for example, you know, for the 8th day is pretty much maids are milking. One year someone gave hares a running, and someone else gave hounds a running, I guess running after the hares.
Mm-hmm.
Gold rings has been consistent through the years, yeah, although one year someone referred to it as Goldie rings.
Okay. Maybe that or somebody mistyped it into Wikipedia.
Yeah. Turtle doves has been pretty consistent over the years.
You'd think.
But even the first one, the partridge in a pear tree, one year someone gave a very pretty peacock upon a pear tree. Also, someone
that's
tried
hard to, I mean, assuming it was to the melodic, is that old enough that maybe it was just during the
chant? It was pre the melody. So I guess if you're chanting away, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Maybe people just didn't hear it well.
Yeah. Swans are swimming is the only one that's been unchanged over the years.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk about more. So I think we're going to talk about some of those specifically when we get to them. But really what we did for this is it was what did us make us think of? It was almost like a psychology thing. Where
word association.
What's the first thing that comes to mind? And maybe these aren't the first things that came to mind, but they were the first things that came to mind that we could somehow incorporate in a podcast.
So to let our listeners know, both of us sort of thought about the 12 days of Christmas. We wrote down the first things that came to mind. But I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay, do so.
When you created your list of things, were you honest and just had the first thing that came into your mind, or did you go, at some level, I need to make it Christmassy? Because I know I did a little bit. I took, for example, for the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me. Let me go to the, just to show you here, that listeners, you can hear the research on our table.
You can hear the research.
A partridge in a pear tree. So I thought, what did that mean to me? But what did it mean to me in terms of a Christmas memory? So I was very honest about trying to have everything tie into Christmas. I'm asking you, in your word association, did you do that?
Nope.
Okay. No, it's not a judgment. I'm just saying. I mean,
you know.
All right, so let's start going through them, because some interesting things came up.
Sure, yeah. So first one, everybody should know this much, a partridge in a pear tree. Partridge.
You know what came to my mind?
What's that?
Was to ask you, have you ever eaten a lot of game?
A lot of game?
And I don't just mean like chicken and turkey, because obviously, you know, turkey has become the traditional Christmas bird.
I don't think chicken qualifies as game at all. Turkey would be game.
Well, yeah, it's a sort of a fly and farm animal.
Isn't game something that you hunt that's in the wild? Isn't that
you can have wild chickens, can't you?
No.
All right. Well, maybe because all these things ultimately sort of taste like chicken.
A chicken could get away, but there is not like a wild version of chicken out there. I don't think.
Escape chicken.
Which really raises a whole other question. We could do a whole other podcast on where do chickens come from. So well, eggs, of course.
Well, it depends what came first.
Exactly.
I mean, have you eaten a lot of game?
No.
I've eaten pheasant.
Uh-huh.
I've eaten goose. I've eaten duck. And I've also eaten duck.
But duck is farm-raised, too.
But I've had duck in the non-Peking duck version.
Oh, yeah, but I've had a lot of duck. Duck's good stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of it.
Really?
I like the Peking duck because I like the hoisin sauce and all the stuff. But regular duck, very fatty.
Well, that's what makes it good.
Yeah. I wasn't a big fan of goose. Pheasant, I quite liked. But I'm now going to say something that's probably going to have our listeners reaching for the off switch. Pheasant tastes very gamey.
Yes.
Well, it does. I mean, and that's what I'm saying.
What does gamey taste like?
Well, I hate to say this, gamey tastes of something. If we're honest with ourselves, turkey and chicken, they don't really taste of anything.
Well, turkey's got a distinct taste. I could tell turkey.
All right, let me ask you a question then. When you're having your Christmas dinner or Thanksgiving dinner in America,
which, by the way, did you hear about the Thanksgiving's like making its inroads into England?
Yeah, I saw that. I think it was an excuse to have a Black Friday so everyone go shopping.
Yep.
When I have any of those dinners, my palate tends to respond to all the other stuff on the plate, like the stuffing and the gravy. Mm-hmm. I'm not sitting there going, "Oh, I'm really looking forward to the taste of turkey."
No, turkey's not.
My point being, if you have something like pheasant, or I'm assuming partridge, when people say, "Oh, it tastes like chicken, but it tastes kind of gamey," they do have a stronger flavor to them.
Yeah, but the question is, what flavor is that?
Sort of, kind of meaty. Do you know what I mean?
I imagine that is not how the gastronomers of the world describe it. Is that what you describe it? Right?
Yeah. So anyway, there you go.
All right. Well, I thought of, coincidentally, pears, because, you know, it's the partridge in a pear tree, right? Yep. So pears are a peculiar fruit to my mind. I never really know what I'm going to get. I don't really have a good sense of what pear is a good variety. You know, listen, maybe people will differ, but the best pear is that soft, super juicy kind, yeah. almost like a really juicy plum or peach or something. Not that yeah. it tastes like those, but it's got the consistency of those. But I can't tell you how many times I've bought a pear in the store. I come back and you bite it and it's like
it's hard
solid and yeah. it cracks. It's worse than an apple, like in terms of the apple. Interesting. You know, apples, to my mind, are pretty consistent. You know, like there aren't like, oh, soft apples, hard. They're all, I mean, they're different tastes to different apples, sure. but they're pretty consistent. Whereas a pear seems like it's all over the map. And so, you know, I started to try to do some research about the different types of pears. So maybe I would be better educated. I ultimately decided, I think the pear I like is the Bartlett pear, but only when it's ripe, because the little websites talk about the Bartlett pears being, you know, when you let them get ripe, they're super juicy. But before that, they're pretty hard and like crunchy. Now, I do think a lot of these pears apparently good for cooking. And that's fine with me, but I don't like eating them raw.
In terms of your research and talking about different pears, are there harder pears or and let me finish my thought now. Are some pears harder than others? Or when you do bite into that one that's really hard, is that because you've bought a pear that's not ready to be eaten? Do you know what I'm saying?
No, some pears are definitely okay. like always going to be harder pears. They're more like an apple. They're okay. And I, like, so you got Bosque pears, Bartlett pears, Farrell, which I've never had.
Isn't that Farrell?
Farrell.
Yeah. Boom, boom. Okay. All right.
Yep. Taylor's Gold. Anjou. People know Anjou pears. And I think sometimes those can be nice and squishy.
I like the Bosque pears. They're my favorite. And let me tell you why. Because in my own personal pear buying experience, mm-hmm. I have never had a hard Bosque pear. So I always feel like, ooh, that's the one I like. Says, even though I've probably been quite fortunate.
The pear's white flesh is sweet, crisp, and firm to the touch. I'm looking at Epicurious here. Crisp sweet, sounds like kind of
sweet
hard.
And juicy.
If a recipe calls for poaching, Bosque pears are a good choice since they will keep their shape and not turn to mush.
Oh.
So that seems to me like a relatively – whereas Bartlett is
– Bartlett's always seemed like house bricks to me in my experience.
No, but I think they're the ones –
But I think they're ones that you have to get them when they're ripe. But if you go to like a crap grocery store, they're just sticking out on the shelf, whatever they've got. And, you know, I tend not to.
It has a delicate skin, a sweet taste, and a bite that is juicy and soft.
All right.
So maybe you don't even know your pears.
I don't know.
Apparently.
I need to work on my pear necessities. Mm. Boom, boom.
Oh, man.
Oh, it's Christmas.
He didn't write that down in advance.
No, I didn't. I just made that up, which is even more amazing. Off the cuff.
All right. So that's day one for you.
All right.
So day two, on the second day of Christmas, true love gave to me two turtle doves. We're not going to repeat, by the way. Of course, you run through all of the priors each time you do the verse, right? Two turtle doves and a partridge.
Yeah, we're not going to come back. It's like 10 green bottles, isn't
it? That's right.
Yeah.
10 green bottles. That must be the English verse, 100 bottles.
10 green bottles hanging on the wall. 10 green bottles standing on the wall, and if one green bottle should accidentally fall, there'll be 9 green bottles. And then you go through the whole song.
Well, yes. The American version would be 100 bottles of beer on the wall, 100 bottles of beer.
There you go. Yeah.
When a bottle should happen to fall, 99
bottles. Then you down to 99. Yeah. I think you can start any number and just get going.
Yeah, hopefully you start with something lower than 100 because you'd be there all day.
Yeah. But I don't have the history of that song, so I don't know if it originally started as a chant. Probably, mm-hmm. yeah.
So, the two turtle doves, so.
I instantly thought of chocolate, because in this country they have that, you can get, there's that chocolate called a turtle. Now, I didn't have them in England, but in America, right. It's like a little sort of mix of toffee, and it's got a pecan nut.
Nuts in it,
or
yeah.
a pecan.
Yeah, not my favorite kind of candy.
No, I didn't like it, but that was in playing the true word association. That's what came to mind. Turtle doves.
That's all you got?
That's all I've got. That's all I've got. But well, no, we'll come around to that.
Well, candy. Oh, you have other, because I knew you have another item on here that you identified with candy.
Yeah, so I'll wait till that one.
Okay, all right. So I thought of turtleneck shirts, right?
Yeah.
Which quite a few people, you'll get a turtleneck shirt for Christmas.
Turtlenecks are out right now, as far as I'm concerned. Turtlenecks survive on a 20-year cycle.
Is that because Steve Jobs passed away?
Yes, there you go, yeah.
He was a big turtleneck.
To all those Apple people.
Black turtlenecks when he gave his presentation.
Turtlenecks were big in the 90s. Then they sort of went away, so they are due to return. That's my opinion. They were big in the 70s when I was a kid. Then they were big in the 90s. And now we're in the, whatever this is, the 10s. I'm assuming they will be reappearing in popularity.
I think we're in, oh, we are in the 10s.
We are in the 10s. Yeah. But in the O's or the noughties or whatever they call them.
Well, it makes sense. A lot of youth are wearing 80s clothes these days. So maybe that's why we're not seeing a lot of turtlenecks.
Are you a turtleneck wearer, let me ask you?
No.
Were you ever?
I've tried. Doesn't work well for me. And occasionally wear them. I think there are, like I was saying before we got on, there are turtleneck people and non-turtleneck people. I like to put it on. I invariably find within a half an hour, I'm annoyed. Like, this thing is it's on itchy, your yeah, neck. Yeah, yeah. Not itchy exactly. Because, I mean, you get a cotton turtleneck. It's not that it's, like, irritating. It's just there. It's pressing the whole time on your neck. And, you know, some people, not that I have a huge neck, but relative to my size, I have a bigger neck than some others might. So it's always like every turtleneck I've ever had in my life has felt too tight.
Okay. But it's supposed to be.
Too tight? No, it should be.
No, but it's supposed to be form-fitting.
Yeah.
See, I was a big turtleneck person. I like a turtleneck. I put them on. I put on a nice turtleneck sweater.
So maybe you should bring them back.
I think when I wear a turtleneck, a wool turtleneck,
What's a wool turtleneck?
Well, like a wool sweater. Because now I'm now going to address something you've just...
That's not a turtleneck shirt.
That's a turtleneck sweater.
All right, fine.
A turtleneck shirt is
like... That could bother your neck, sure. But that's a different thing.
But if you wear a wool sweater, it grips your neck. Like, it stays around your neck. If you wear, like, a cotton turtleneck shirt, as you go through the day, it stretches a little bit.
No, it's not a good one.
It hangs loose.
That's yeah. Maybe, you know what I mean? Maybe, then, one, maybe some I, cheap ones you got from Kmart, but
and I find that the loose hanging turtlenecks bother me because it's basically like having a collar that doesn't work. But a turtleneck sweater that's been stuck to your neck, and our listeners can't see, but both of us are touching our necks like we're trying to escape being strangled by someone. I like a good form fitting turtleneck. Do you ever wear mock turtles?
Well, I was about to say that's the next topic. So I did have some of those in the 90s, when that was the thing. And I could deal with that because it would really only come up halfway and it wasn't nearly as constricting. So they're all right.
I'm going to stick
not
up.
My favorite thing in the
I'm going to stick up for the turtleneck.
I like a deep cleavage, you know.
No, I'm going to stick up for the turtleneck. I'm going to stick up for the turtleneck in general. It's one of those things you can wear it and it can be both casual and smart. Like you can wear it. You can wear a turtleneck sweater and just
go skiing in it. That's what I used to wear them all the time for skiing.
But if you wear a turtleneck, if you have a nice turtleneck sweater, you can throw on a sport jacket or a sport coat, and you can go to a function and you look very sort of trendy. And hey, look at his style, Mr. GQ.
Not that I haven't done that, but it.
I used to do it all the time.
It's not right.
Why is it not right?
It's just. The line, it's this thing up around your neck and a nothing like a blank shirt in front of your jacket. That just seems wrong.
Yeah,
to
but
me.
You look, to me, you look like a 70s TV private eye.
That's not good.
Why does it feel like the Saint or James Bond or someone? I think it's, I love
James Bond would not be caught dead in a turtleneck with a blazer.
Pierce Brosnan used to wear turtlenecks in his movies all the time.
That could be a problem, right?
I'll tell you what,
I don't remember seeing him in a turtleneck. There's no way that, that Sean Connery, well, maybe he would wear a turtleneck.
He wore them in his non-James Bond films.
Yeah.
And because when in the 70s.
When he's trying to look professorial.
Yes. But that's what I'm saying. The turtlenecks are currently out, but I sort of made out of it. I tell you what I do like, and I'm wearing one right now, is I like those tops with the
half zip thing, yeah.
Because when you pull them all the way up, as I've done just now.
That's very loose, though. Does that bother you?
That's the loudest because I've just pulled them up. I'm sort of recreating the sexiness of the turtleneck look, but without the constriction.
What the viewers can't see is that part of it is inaccurate.
But what, you mean the sexiness or the recreation? Okay.
Yeah.
But no, I put it this way.
The thing is, if it has a bad zipper, that can be worse than anything. Like if it's got a zipper that's
and it catches your Adam's apple and
stuff like that, that's pretty bad.
But I do tend to like clothing like fleece tops and stuff where you can zip them up around your neck. Do you know what I mean? I like that sort of. I feel ready. I'm like Bruce Lee.
Yeah, well, I will say what I do. I like a real jacket that zippers all the way up is nice. I like that.
Okay.
So even the turtlenecks for skiing a few years ago, I realized I don't need that. I don't need to have a turtleneck in order to go, out in cold weather. I've got jackets and scarves and things like that.
Yeah, but the whole point of the turtleneck is you wear it in lieu of a scarf.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't wear a scarf and a turtleneck. You go one or the other. Are you a scarf wearer then?
You know, I wish I was. Again, same thing. I wish I was more of a scarf wearer. It doesn't really, not really a big thing for me.
All right. So again, so if I, so on the second day of Christmas, if I give you my true love, a turtleneck, you're going to unwrap that later.
What was that noise? I looked away, so I don't know what you were doing with that noise, true love.
If I were to give you a turtleneck for the second day of Christmas, later on, you're going to be unwrapping it, and with the other member of the Atlantic Voice household, you're going to go, seriously, this is what you got me?
Nah, I mean, I don't know. Honest. See, the thing is, again, like, I have...
Because this is the bottom line. If I gave you a turtleneck, later on, are you swearing at me behind my back, or are you going, I actually kind of like the gift Seth gave me? Because if you gave me a turtleneck, I would go,
if it's a good one, if it's some junky thing with annoying seam and stuff like that, I won't be too into it. The other thing about a turtleneck to keep in mind is usually the shirt component of it is relatively...
billowy.
No, no, the opposite I was going to say. A billowy, turtleneck, that would really look 90s-ish. Yeah. But if you had a... It's usually a little tighter, so if you got a belly, it's not a good thing.
Oh, man boobs.
Like, yeah, I didn't even think of that. But, you know, but like the combination of the turtleneck itself... Like, see, if you wear a collared shirt, it's got some... the stuff there, like up and around your neck area, so it balances out everything. Whereas if you have the turtleneck, it's like having Under Armour on, but in a dress, the dress style version of Under Armour, and this does not work well for
me. No, you're right. I think you do have to have the physique to pull a turtleneck off. Mm-hmm. I guess that's why I like them.
Oh.
So are we done with the second day of Christmas?
I think we are.
All right, let's barrel on.
On the third day of Christmas, true love gave to me 3 French hens.
Do you want to go first, or am I going first?
First of all, what is a French hen? Is it different than a regular hen?
It's a chicken with an accent.
Yeah. What does that sound like?
A chicken with an attitude.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We don't have a lot of French fans, so we have a lot of people listening in Spain. So if you have the Spanish equivalent of a hen, hola.
Well, I can do.
I can
do the numbers. Okay. Trace French hens.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
There you go.
Look, actually, no. French hens is when you have chicken and French fries. Boom. The French food. Yeah. I don't know what a French hen is.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm assuming it's a regular type hen.
Yeah.
Well, no. Okay. I'm going to be deadly serious now. On the very first one, when I asked you about eating game, you questioned whether there was such a thing as wild chicken. But I think a French hen... Is back in the old days, it was not in the old days, but in the first days of factory farming. I think a French hen was another way of talking about like a free range chicken that's been running around rather than a chicken that's been bred, you know, in a big factory farm. They've got more in those cages. So I do always think of a French hen as sort of like a, you know, when you see those films and the farmers walk into their yard and there's chickens cluck, cluck, clucking running around. I always think of those as French hens.
Yeah. Still, I don't think that's wild. It's hanging around. It's not like a foraging.
It's not truly domesticated, though, is it? I mean, it's living outside the house. So while it's not wild,
it doesn't have to live in the house to be domesticated. Cows are domesticated. They don't live in your house.
No, I understand. But what I'm saying is it's not living in the woods, but it is living outside and sort of running around and getting into it with the sheepdog and that type of thing. Do you know what I mean?
I'm sure. You know, there was...
If you have a parrot, it lives in a cage in your house. It's a domesticated bird.
Have you seen the Anthony Bourdain show, Parts Unknown?
Yes. I like him a lot. Very good.
Recommended to everybody. It's on...
CNN.
Yeah, it's repeating. Like, they did a marathon on Thanksgiving, and so I recorded them all and been getting through them. But they had an episode on... they're not all about food, even though he's obviously a food person. A lot of it's about culture, but it was in Lyon, France. Lyon, is that how you pronounce it?
I think it is Lyon, yeah.
And it being a hotbed of like everything, chefs like going back for 100 years and these legendary types. And they had a lot of, you know, I don't know, some of these things were French hens. They had some dish where literally it was like 3 chickens and a pig and, you know, all these sort of things. It was all like piled up in this big tray.
Or poussins, I think is technically right. Poisson is French. Yeah. I always think of French hens as those brown chickens, but with a lot of sort of plumage coming out of their head. Do you know what I mean? In a very sort of extravagant way. So it looks like a 3 Musketeer of chicken. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
It's got like they're itty bitty, almost like quail size, but we don't know anything about it.
No, that's a Cornish game hen.
Well, that's what I think of.
Well, Cornish is in Britain.
And that even has game
French
in it.
Version. Well, yeah, okay. They're like those mini chickens.
Maybe the French hens are Cornish game hens that were, you know.
Have you ever had Cornish game hen?
I think so, yeah.
Did you like it?
Sure.
I found it fiddly. I found it like I was being given chicken. You know, in the way that, like, I like, when I eat fish, I like either, I don't like messing about with bones.
Right, right.
So I'm either given a sardine, right, where you just eat the whole thing, or an anchovy, or I get a nice cut of salmon. So I know I can eat away without worrying about a bone.
Yeah, you don't want one of these, like, whole long fishes that you got to be picking the bones out.
I feel like getting a Cornish game hen is the equivalent of getting a fiddly bit of fish. I feel like I'm always fighting with little bones and tendons. Really,
I assume you don't like crabs, then.
I like soft-shell crabs. Regular crabs are a lot of effort.
Thing. Yeah,
that's exactly. I'm very simple when it comes to my...
So Cornish game hen is the Baltimore crab of, or the, you know, blue crab of the,
I think that's
the chicken world.
That's a good way to put it, yes.
All right, well, we haven't even gotten to the topic here. So you had an item, which I'll...
Let's go ahead and play it. Yeah, this is what I'm giving you. I'm giving you your first proper gift.
Yeah. All right, Popeye's here. Get your hands on your heads. Get off the bar and get on the wall. What's my name?
Popeye Doyle. If he doesn't like you, he'll take you apart. And it's all perfectly real.
I mean, very few people are going to know what this movie is, by the way.
Great.
Some of our older listeners.
I'm going to talk about it for about a minute after this.
Doyle is bad news.
His French Connection, released in 1971.
We're going now. Bye.
Which is really based on a true story.
Based on a true story, yeah.
Yeah. Which I have a true story element to where I have a connection into.
Okay.
Yeah.
A French connection. French Connection. There's a reason I think about this film at Christmas.
Is there anything I should be waiting for?
No. You can just turn it down. Okay. We just, for those of you who've never seen it, again, as my partner just said, 1971. It's one of those gritty late 60s, 1970s cop movies.
Roy Scheider.
Roy Scheider, yeah. But one of his earlier roles before Jaws. It's famous for having Gene Hackman won an Oscar. And it's famous for having a really...
Best actor?
Yeah, well, best actor supporting. For being... Yeah, and he didn't want to be in the film because he was... As an actor, he was uncomfortable with the violence. Even for its time, it's relatively violent. He beats up a guy in a toilet. But there is a super famous car chase where he chases a villain who's riding a subway train through, I think it's either Brooklyn or the Bronx. So it's the elevated subway train, and he's chasing the villain, I think, in a big V8 Plymouth underneath.
Isn't that an oxymoron, an elevated subway train?
It is an oxymoron, yes. But it's a great movie. It's one of my favorite I love those sort of old school 70s cop movies. Gene Hackman's brilliant. He did win an Oscar for it. Two reasons why I think about it in relation to Christmas. And I didn't think, obviously, I used French hens as a connection, as an excuse to talk about the French Connection. One, there's a scene early in the film where he's undercover as Santa Claus. It's all about these guys busting drug dealers, and he starts off just busting people on the street, and then he gets involved with a criminal ring who are trying to bring drugs into the country from France, and he becomes obsessed with taking down this big French drug dealer. I've told this story before on other shows. Back in the UK when I was a kid, Christmas TV was when the broadcast networks put on first-run movies, and you all sat around the house on Christmas Day and the next day, and you all watched first-run movies on TV. Very exciting. This is in the days before DVD, before VCR, all this kind of stuff. I remember watching The French Connection as like I must have been 9 or 10 or 12, and it was the day after Christmas in England called the Boxing Day. And there were both major channels were showing a blockbuster action movie. And the choice on one channel was Day of the Jackal, the original Day of the Jackal, the Frederick Forsyth book about the guy trying to kill Charles de Gaulle. And then the BBC, they had on at exactly the same time The French Connection.
Big showdown.
And my mother made the decision, we're watching The French Connection. And I'm glad, and I love The Day of the Jackal, but my first memory of watching this film was watching it at Christmas time. And, of course, being 10, 11, 12 years of age, all I know is it's a cop movie and there's a great car chase. I'm not used to the subtleties of, wow, Gene Hackman's a great actor. I actually own the Blu-ray now. Mm-hmm. If you've never seen this film, it's a great...
Well, I'm going to borrow it from you over the holidays to watch it with my family.
It really is it's a great film. Gene Hackman's brilliant. The car chase is famous. It was directed by the same guy who went on to direct The Exorcist. William Friedkin was the director. He also directed an 80s movie in a similar vein called To Live and Die in L.A., which also has a great car chase in it and is also based on the true memoirs of a U.S. Secret Service agent. But again, this is sort of vaguely, it's based on true events. Very exciting, raw, gritty 70s cop movie. It's very rare. I've noticed recently that there have been some films... I think it was a couple of years ago. Have you ever seen Zodiac by David Fincher?
Yep.
Zodiac attempted to sort of recreate both that era, but also that tale of cop movies now are basically all variants of Lethal Weapon and Die Hard, completely over the top. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Zodiac was like a real crime investigation.
Yeah, and French Connection, and even the subway chase when the subway car chase when it occurs, still feels very real. But people always talk about the car chase. The car chase is brilliantly filmed. Apparently, they did a lot of it without permission. If you listen to the commentary, the guy goes, yeah, we did a couple of scenes without permission. It wasn't full of stunt drivers. It's worth watching, and it's a great piece of 70s Americana.
That is quite a sales pitch, this episode.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a great movie. So there you go. French Connection. That's what I think of a Christmas.
What I was going to mention about it. So I don't remember. Is there, when the drugs are being brought over from France, do they tell you how they're being brought over?
I don't want to give it away. I mean, no. I could then just spoil it.
It's a... Okay. 40-year-old movie, 45-year-old movie.
The French guys hide the drugs in a limousine car. But Gene Hackman's character, Popeye Doyle, and his sidekick, Roy Scheider, whose nickname is Cloudy, the two of them can't... They know the drugs are coming, and they can't figure it out.
So I had a neighbor growing up who dealt...
drugs in his cars.
No, oh. Dealt European cars. And would bring him over. And, you know, at that time, you know, bringing over, it was always notable because, you know, we're in the 70s, yeah. You know, they always had BMWs and stuff. And the guy was always like, what is this interesting car? One of them was orange. It was very cool.
Yeah.
But apparently, I don't know whether it's the direct plot that you described, but his cars was, he was being brought over were being used for these purposes without his knowledge.
Oh, wow, where, yeah.
Like, people were packing drugs into cars and bringing them over, and so, like,
well, again,
he had
the
this
movie.
Tangential involvement. Yeah. He never went to jail, so I know he wasn't involved in it. But apparently that was the story. I ever sat down and talked to him when I was 8 years old finding out about this story, but...
The character in French Connection that Gene Hackman plays is I think it's based on a book written by a real New York police detective. And so I think the basic plot of the film, people smuggling drugs using cars, I mean, that's the way it was. I mean, yeah, so.
You did not have nearly the inspection level.
No.
So
what are you giving me? I've given you an exciting Blu-ray movie with a car chase. You can put it on your big screen. What are you giving me?
Well, let's start off with this is, see if you can identify it, although you might already know what it is, but give everybody a chance to identify it, and then we can come into what it actually is, why I picked it. Oops, that's an ad.
It's an ad for The Hobbit.
Well, we need to get past that.
I don't do those mouth breather movies. So your gift to me?
Of course, you can actually see what it is, so really having you guess isn't going to be that big a deal. I mean, it's French horns.
These are French horns, yeah.
Of course. Interestingly enough, they're called Vienna horns in the thing, but I...
Really?
Yeah, well, I went and looked. It's really... Apparently, the trend is not to call French horns at all. They're just horns, and so they're all the same thing, which is kind of weird because, like, trumpets and everything are horns also, but apparently French horns are somehow unique. Like, if you unrolled them, they'd be 10 feet long or something like that in a big straight horn. And you know what? I realized in listening to this... Tons and tons of movie soundtracks. French horns very popular in soundtracks because I think it's just a particular type of. It's more grandiose sounding than a trombone or a trumpet kind of thing. It has a anthematic kind of feeling.
That's a good way of putting it.
And this is the theme to Back to the Future,
which I did not recognize.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I don't. While I like those films, I didn't instantly recognize the music. I sort of recognized a melody or two.
That was a text coming in while we were. So
you know what a French horn is? It's a horn with a bit of an attitude.
Yeah.
Again, we don't have many listeners in France, so what do I care?
Now, of course, a French horn does also sound a little Christmassy when you think. Right?
Well, it does, doesn't it? I guess. Because you're right. It does seem to be the forerunner of all brass instruments. In that, as you've just said, all brass instruments technically are French horns. So what I'm saying is I can see someone wandering around the street in the 16th century going... Let me wake everyone up with a blast of my French horn.
Well, what I mean is apparently they just call these horns. The French horns, they call those horns. And everything else, trumpets are trumpets, trombones are trombones. I don't know why it's like that, but that's...
Why is a... What's the background between the nomenclature Vienna horns?
Oh, I think because they say actually it was originally invented in Germany.
Oh, okay. But Vienna's in Austria.
Well, I should say, yes.
They're all the same, aren't they? Yeah. We don't have many listeners in Austria either, so I can just insult you lot as well.
Well, maybe it was Germany at the time it was invented. And okay. Maybe it wasn't really part of Austria at that point. So
you're giving me a blast on a horn or the film Back to the Future?
Back to the Future, I will say. Okay. So last night when I was queuing up all these clips, myself and, as you mentioned, the other member of the household here were listening, and I said, oh, you know, how fast can you guess it? Boom, like that. Guessed it like right at a bit.
Really?
Said, yeah. So I started playing other soundtracks, and we now have an episode idea because she participated in it because she would get all these soundtracks like 2 seconds.
Masterful. I named that tune. Yeah,
exactly. Right. So we may have to do an episode in the future because they're all available online, you know, that where we queue up like – actually what we really should do is – you know, your 5 favorite soundtracks, my favorites, and I don't mean soundtracks. It's got to be the theme song like this. It's like, you know, the one that goes over the credits or over the end credits.
I'm going to digress for a moment.
A lot of good stuff.
I am going to digress for a moment, and I'm now going to promote upcoming episodes. My partner has kind of agreed to this idea, but he doesn't know we're going to be doing it. But our spring, we always do a 2-part special sometime during February and April. I think our spring special, 2-part special, we've discussed this many times, is to do TV theme tunes.
Oh yeah, we talked about.
So, okay,
that.
So, anyway, that so I'm just, those of you who have hung.
That's
with
what
this,
we
this
did when we ran out of name that tunes for movie themes. We went to TV themes.
All right, so there
which
you go,
are that. Really mostly a lot easier. Other than the fact that there's this whole group of TV themes from like the mid '80s or early '80s that like just they all sound sort of the same.
Yeah.
But there's most of the ones that you'd think of off the top of your head. But anyway, like, we're 2 second
recognitions. We're going to do a special with some 70s and 80s, and maybe we'll have a little vote off. Or anyway, but that's going to be one of our upcoming specials.
Well, that's okay. We can do that. It's not really that big a surprise to me.
All right, so you're giving me a fanfare of horns.
There you go. Yes.
All right.
Now, that was 3 French hymns. Now we go to 4 calling birds, which before we talk about things.
There's some history here with let's get back to the song itself. The song now is 4 calling birds, as in, hey, I'm calling you. But apparently...
No, it's like songbirds.
Well, this is the thing, actually. The history of it... See, I've done some research. I know traditionally I get beaten up for not doing any research. Mm-hmm. I've done some research on the song. The current song is Calling Birds.
Yep.
C-A-L-L-I-N-G. But in fact, that is a lazy interpretation of what were originally called collie birds, C-O-L-L-Y. And what a collie bird is a blackbird.
Really?
Yes, that is the history. So what's happened is the song has morphed into calling birds because no one knows what a collie bird is. I didn't know what a collie bird is. If you look at the history over the years...
The canary birds.
Number 4 has been number 4, one of the birds, the 4th day.
What is that?
We've had collie birds, colored birds.
Oh, I see.
Curly birds, don't know what that is. Let me see here. Canary bird. And then at some moment during the early 20th century, it just morphed into calling birds.
Mm-hmm.
But originally, all the other ones are variants of a blackbird, an old-fashioned blackbird. Which leads me to what I thought of when I saw 4th Day of Christmas calling birds. I immediately thought of that old nursery rhyme, 4 and 20 blackbirds baked in a pie. So my word association was pie. And I'll talk a little bit about what I gave you. But there you go. There is a history of the 4th Day of Christmas. Right. Used to be collie birds, C-O-L-L-Y. Because I don't know what a calling bird is. They all make noise all the time. And
when you go
wake
to the,
up in the night.
When you go to the Wikipedia entry and you click on calling birds, it takes you to like songbirds, basically. So anything that
canaries. See, I did a little bit more than just click on Wikipedia. I researched the 12
within
days of Christmas.
So you clicked a second time within Wikipedia to get to the other parts.
That's called digging deep. Yeah,
that's right. Journalism.
So anyway, I physically brought you mince pies today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anyone growing up in England knows when you say mince pie, people know exactly what it is. But what was your first reaction when I gave you a box and said, oh, here are some mince pies?
Well, first of all, so normally I think of English pies. I think of meat pies that, you know, you have like sort of a sandwich kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, you can have it hot and just eat it with your hand and that kind of thing. And then the picture on the box, first of all, it's called mince pie.
M-I-N-C-E.
Actually, it's called mince meat pie, right? And then the picture, the stuff inside of the pie is dark.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, it's going to be like a...
gamey.
Yeah, right. Or, you know, liver stew or something like that. And so we warmed them up. And I realized in the process, I'm like, this thing's covered in sugar. This is going to be really weird.
Yeah.
And then when I ate it, realized it was fruit. And so when, even though they say minced meat, there's no meat in it. It's like the meat of a fruit, you know, like it's more the generic term of the substance inside of whatever you eat, I guess, is meat. It's kind of weird.
Those of you who've never had a mince pie.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I'm going to assume most people listening have had Christmas cake. So Christmas cake. Christmas cake, or maybe not.
No, what's a Christmas cake?
Like a fruit cake.
Oh, okay,
so it's all dried fruit, like raisins.
Yeah.
And mince pie is basically a variant of the same thing. It's that same kind of, you know, kind of crap fruit. Like, it's not like a nice raspberry. It's all like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's, yeah, I mean, this
but it's all been sort of stewed and then covered in molasses and sort of like stored jelly-ish. Away. Yeah, and then you use it as a filling. Because I think back in the old days, that was how you, it was basically the same principle of like fruit preserve.
Mm-hmm.
And then so it all came from the summer, and then they used
compote.
It up in winter. Yeah, there you go, compote, but with the consistency of compost. But it's very tasty. I mean, you normally, they add in alcohol, and it's that sort of...
Yeah, I noticed the one that you brought was somehow linked to scotch.
Yeah.
And said it had some... I didn't taste anything scotch-related.
No, I
imagine it'd be hard for them to sell pies full of scotch, but...
Did you like the mince pie?
Oh, yeah, it was really good.
It's interesting, because when I was a kid... I was like, ooh, it's pie. So I'd always get excited for a sweet treat. And then you eat it and you're like, oh, I'd rather have had a piece of chocolate.
Well, I imagine.
As I've got older, I've liked them.
I imagine there's a lot of bad versions around. I mean, just like you called it Christmas cake, but, you know, fruit cake.
There's bad fruit cake.
Most people, that's the joke, right? It's junk, you know, kind of thing. But you could actually find ones that are pretty good.
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. I went into the British store the other day to bring a gift for you because we are going to, in a moment, I'm going to hit you with something about Christmas.
There
were the cheap mince pies. These were the more expensive ones.
Yeah.
I thought, because I tend not to like them myself anyway. And my grandma used to make them every Christmas.
Living high on the hog.
I bought the
best pre-prepared mince pie.
To bring to you as a gift. A real gift. And I've not yet given you the French Connection, but I brought for you, for the show today, pies.
And after bringing it to me, what did you do?
Well, I ate one. It was my breakfast.
One?
Why, two?
Yeah.
Well, because I knew, but still.
Like, I said, oh, we're going to save these for the podcast. You're like, no, I'm hungry. I haven't had breakfast. So we had to eat them right away.
If we were podcasting at that moment, I would have eaten and podcasted.
Well, sure.
But as we were going to wait the podcast, I'm like, I can't hang about. I need my breakfast. Give me some pie.
I think it's really better. While we've had some episodes where we've eaten things on the air, it's not really great.
For the listener?
Yeah. It's a lot of us, like, if we're not making eating noises in the microphone, it's a lot of awkward pauses while somebody finishes so they don't make noises in the microphone. So I'm not sure I'm too high on the eating on the air thing.
But you did like the mince pie.
Yeah.
And again, it's called mince meat.
Yeah. I've certainly heard the phrase when we talk about like the meat of a fruit or something like that. But it is funny to think about the word meat because they don't say animal meat. I mean, I guess you do say animal meat, but you don't say the meat of an animal. You just say meat, and that means meat. But and yet the term meat is used for fruit and anything that's got that sort of hunky.
I do know this. I learned this from my dear departed grandmother, who was a great baker. Back in the old days, there is sort of a connection to the notion of meat. Because back in the old days, think of like raisins and dried grapes, and it's all mushed together. So obviously you need something with a more liquid-like substance to help kind of break it down. They add sugar and molasses, but I also think back in the day they used to add suet, which is basically animal fat.
Yeah, so I do think put it in your bird feeder.
Yeah. So at some moment, I think there is sort of a meat. Yeah, there is a historical, you know. So I think it's a question of real meat, but also what you said, the meat of the fruit, and it all goes in a pie. And but again, it do not sit there and go, "Ooh, I'm going to have a mince pie for lunch." If you're lusting for something savory, it is in fact something sweet.
All right.
Yeah.
So my calling birds item was cell phones calling. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Calling
a
cell phone, yeah. And that how they're now boring. I mean, we've had episodes. I mean, we've been doing these things long enough where we had big discussions about the new features on cell phones and things like that. But other than the fact that, you know, your contract comes up every 2 years. Well, you did recently because you were sort of behind at times.
Yeah,
you made the upgrade from a blackberry held together by with rubber bands and tape.
Yeah, old school.
That's
a working
old
phone.
School, old school and broken.
That's to an iPhone. Phone.
But other than that, these new iPhone came out, new Android phones have come out, and you're like, meh. You know, it's adding things around the edge. We've really seemed to have maxed out the things you can do with that sort of device. I mean, well, obviously, there's going to be something, but, you know, there was a very high acceleration into all these cool things you could do, and now it's just marginal improvements, and now it's not exciting getting the phone. In fact, I find, you know, like a lot of times you kill your time with a phone, and now I'm like,
it's kind of boring,
not much to do with this thing.
I'm going to tell you a true story. When I go to use the restroom, I will play backgammon on my cell phone.
See, that's bold because you run the risk of dropping it.
Yeah, that is a concern to me, yes. But I don't like read anymore. I'll play backgammon on my cell phone. But I'm sure at some moment I will get tired of that and I will go back to reading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the only thing I really do. Like the games, for a little while I put games on there and like these are all stupid. I mean, like big craze game, but it's like it's mind numbing the way these games are, you know. They're not worth the effort.
Do you think though?
Backgammon would be nice because it's a real game, but.
Do you think though, and to sit on cell phones for a few minutes, if the cell phone itself has become boring, are you in any way curious at this notion of cell phones as watches?
Well, yeah.
Using your cell phone as money.
If there's going to be the money thing, I don't understand why. It's going to happen, and I suppose there's an aspect where you might at some point not even carry your wallet around, I guess, but.
But you're still carrying
the credit card
around,
is this little itty bitty tiny thing. The way things. You know, technology trends make headway is they create some benefit to you, like, you know, a significant change. You know, the fact that you can get your email on your phone, that is a big vault forward for things. You know, the texting, the GPS that's built into your phone, these things are like material benefits, and you can see why people go, oh, I need one of those. Is there anybody who thinks that the credit card in their wallet is just really just too much trouble?
You
still have to pull your phone out of the wallet, so you have to pull your phone out of your pocket in order to like tap it on something to pay this stuff. So where is the marginal benefit between one or the other?
It's just a variant, isn't it? Whereas you're right, getting your email on your phone is a step forward.
Right. You'd have to carry around a laptop to figure. Well, now there's a reason to do that. But is there really anybody who's like, boy, I really saved a lot of time by tapping this thing? And moreover, to the extent there is some marginal benefit because you don't swipe something or you don't have to put in your debit card code, is it offset by the fact that, well, that now means if you lose your phone, somebody can use that. Now, obviously, they're supposed to have code so you can put it. But now, like, if you have the security on the phone so that in order to use it to pay for things, you have to punch some numbers in there. Well, now wasn't the credit card just easier?
No, I mean, you're right. It doesn't feel like a step forward. It just feels like a step sideways. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but you're correct. The sense of advancement, the sense of excitement does appear to have waned, maybe for want of a better word. I did see an article in the newspaper today that said something about flip phones are coming back because there is a school of thought where people actually want to, you know, the cell phones and laptops and tablets. There's almost all these devices that almost cross over a little bit. So there is a notion, they all kind of sort of do the same thing. So I think people are now getting back to the stage where they're trying to figure out, well, do I really need four things? What's the fewest things I can live with? And you can make an argument that, well, why don't I have a tablet? And then
I can't make a phone call with a tablet,
so I might as well just get a cheap phone, and then I've got two things.
Right.
But again, you can't get rid of your laptop and just use your cell phone.
Right.
So what I'm saying is everyone needs two things. And so I did read this article where there was this sort of movement where, you know, the old-fashioned flip phone that really you could make phone calls and send texts and that's your lot, that was making a comeback. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, we'll find out. If it's free, that helps.
Yeah.
All right.
If it's free, I'm definitely giving it to you because I thought of spending money.
We get to five. Got to drag it up. Gold. If we were chanting, would we chant it?
Five. We just try five gold rings. Five gold rings.
Is it gold rings or golden rings?
Well, back in the day, it was gold. And then when it turned to golden when the melody joined the tune.
If it's a golden ring, does that mean it's like a fake? Like a gold ring would actually be made of gold. Golden just means, well, it's gold colored.
Yeah. Put it this way, you're getting the cheaper one.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's been downgraded. So
Christmas is about giving.
Zeph had, we get back into some movie stuff.
Yeah. Because...
Well, why is this... Wait.
No, play it. This is it. Play it. Just turn it up.
Where's the music?
It's coming.
Oh.
As Eric runs in slow motion, like a deranged Steve Austin.
What other kind of Steve Austin is there?
They're actually making a new $6 Million Man with Marky Mark as $6 Million Man, but we'll come to that another time. You're, of course, listening to Vangelis's Chariots of Fire theme from the film Chariots of Fire. To tie it into Christmas, when I think of five gold rings, I think of the Olympics. I'm sure... We will mention once again that you and I went to the London Olympics a couple of years ago. I do think of this film. I'm not going to lie to you. I've actually only seen Chariots of Fire once.
So I was about to say, like, I've seen it. I remember seeing it as a kid, being really impressed. But I don't know that I've ever gone back and
it seen is definitive it. Proof, though. When I claim, let me digress for a moment, because actually the point I wanted to make about this film wasn't the film, but it was actually the music, which is Vangelis' theme that's playing right now. Obviously, Chariots of Fire, for those of you who don't know, talks about some Olympics back in the 20s when Britain dominated.
Right. And yet it has the soundtrack full of synthesizers.
Yeah. Britain also dominated the Olympics a couple of years ago. So once again, I think it tells people Britain have long been a world power.
Everybody will know what that really means, but...
It's interesting, because this film won Best Oscar, I think, in 81 or 82. It won Best Film at the Oscars.
82, I think it came out. Although things talk about the music being composed in 81, but I imagine that was...
Vangelis' theme is famous. Back in the 80s, Vangelis actually did a lot of movie music. He did the score to Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And I picked that film on purpose. The most interesting thing about going back and watching trailers on YouTube of this film is how incongruous... Vangelis' synthesizer soundtrack is with a film about 1924 Edwardian Britain. It just doesn't make sense.
It does have a piano in it, but I think that's about as organic as it got.
Whereas Vangelis' Blade Runner score fits. It's future sci-fi robots. The synthesizer is great.
But it's easiest if everything's in the future, because we don't know what they're going to listen to then, so you tie the things together.
But it is weirdly incongruous, and yet...
But that can work sometimes. We were talking... There Will Be Blood, which is, you know, an 1800s set movie, or 1800s, 1700s, 1800s must be. It's got a very... It's not synthesizer, but it's a very, like...
Modern.
Art kind of, like, sound to it. It's very interesting, and it doesn't quite fit, but it worked great in the movie.
Like I say, I've only seen the film once. I can't tell you if it's an entertaining film, but maybe it did win an Oscar.
Maybe you should watch that over the holidays.
Oh, no, I'm watching French Connection.
No, I don't want it. I'll have it.
Let me give you a choice here. If I say to you, Eric, do you want to watch a film with grown men running slowly on the beach in baggy shorts and white button-up shirts? Mm-hmm. Or a film with a 72 Plymouth V8 chasing a subway train?
Oh, yeah, no, I'm taking
that. What's your choice?
Yeah.
There you go. So, but Chariots of Fire is what I think of five gold rings. You know, I think of the Olympics. I think of Chariots of Fire.
That new movie that's coming out shortly, Unbroken, another.
The Angelina Jolie movie?
Yeah. Angelina Jolie directed, about the guy who was, I guess he was American, right?
I think so, yeah.
Shot down during World War II.
Okay.
On the water for 40 some odd days. He was Olympics first. He went to the Olympics first. And then he was shot down. Him and his guys were on the water for like 40 some odd days, then captured, prisoners of war, all this sort of stuff, and how he survived.
So true story, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's in it?
Pretty good. I didn't really recognize
the dude.
Yeah. So maybe it's kind of minor, but it was kind of funny. The first couple of times that the preview came out, they didn't mention Angelina Jolie, and I noticed they started doing that. It's always interesting to see how the marketing of a movie morphs. Where somebody goes, you know what? Let's throw her name in there because we're not getting the buzz or something like that we expected. And you know.
I'm not going to lie. I tend not to do inspirational films, full stop. Again, I mean, Chariots of Fire apparently is a great film. I've seen it once. Yeah, it's great. Britain were the best in the world. Fabulous. I'm proud to say that I've seen the film, but I'm not sitting there on my couch going, I need to be uplifted by this true tale of Olympic heroism from 80 years ago. I tend not to do inspirational films full stop. So I'm not suggesting, you know, you're telling me about Unbroken. Yeah, the reason I can't help you is I'm not interested. So I don't, you know. I don't. I'm, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's fine.
A man overcoming the odds.
That makes a good segue to my five Golden Rings item, which is the new Chris Rock movie, Top Five. So the only thing is it has the word five in it.
Okay.
So
the trailer, I've seen the trailer. The trailer actually looks very, very funny.
Can you possibly tell what it's about? Because I, for the life of me, have seen these trails and been like, oh, yeah, that's funny. That's funny. What is this movie actually about?
I have think no it's idea. A romantic comedy, isn't it?
I don't know. There's the scene with him and his buddy in the hotel. The guy's joking about not being able to take the hangers. Is he a comedian? That, I don't really get what it is.
Is that CeeLo? Tracy Morgan is in the preview. Morgan. And then what's the name of the tubby comedian?
It's not CeeLo. CeeLo's the
singer. CeeLo, something around that.
I forget who it is. Yeah. But, I mean,
Fat Cedric.
I think
Cedric the Entertainer.
It appears to have gotten some. Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
It's gotten some very good reviews. But frankly, I wasn't really bringing it up because of the movie. What's interesting is, of course, when somebody's in a movie, they suddenly get interviewed a bunch of places and they have things to say. And he had two interesting things he was talking about recently. Yep. One was that he was talking about, and this is really, I thought, pretty funny, talking about white progress. And his basic little point was everybody's always talking about black progress over the past, you know, since civil rights era, and how much, oh, look, we've got a black president, you know, black progress. And I'm horribly paraphrasing here, but it's basically his point was, no, that's not a sign of black progress. There were always smart people. Smart
Actually, can I stop you for a moment? You're not horribly paraphrasing. You're just paraphrasing Chris Rock, but you've been able to remove all the humor from it.
Well, I don't think it was, I don't know. No, nice way to step on the joke. I have a punchline here. He says, no, the point is that's not black progress. That's white progress. That's more people, more whites not being racist, you know, who are willing to vote or willing to give the benefit of the doubt to people who are already intelligent. It isn't that they've advanced in some great way. It's that you guys have advanced. Yeah. And he was tying this into the whole fact of his daughter. Like, he's like, listen, my daughters, they're not going to have to deal with as much of this stuff, you know, like it's, and I think there's even a joke in the movie about that where he's going to hail, at least in the previews, he's going to
hail a cab.
Oh, look, I can't possibly hail a cab, puts his arm up, cab stops kind of thing. And so I thought that was pretty interesting. And then the other thing he was talking about was doing comedy routines where the traditional way a comedian, would hone their act is they would go and do it at like a small club.
Yeah.
Well, now with cell phones and video recording, they almost can't do that because somebody's always recording it and is going to put it out there. And these people are even like fans of theirs who think, oh, look, you know, they're probably in some message board. They're going to be like, oh, I was just recently at this stuff. They're working out new material. Here it is. And he said, you know, a lot of times when we do this stuff, you'll tell a joke and it's bad or it's a problem or like maybe it pushed the envelope too much. And so you'll be like, okay, well, that's fine. I just won't keep that in my act when I'm finished honing it. But this thing's on tape now all the time. So apparently, you know, the new thing is that he was saying, listen, we've gotten smoking out of the clubs. You should be able to get, you know, the club should be able to make sure that people aren't filming my act kind of thing, which is completely right. And apparently, I guess there's some story about Patton Oswalt basically walking out of a show or something because people were just recording it and giving him a hard time kind of thing when he's trying to work out materials.
Then they should hope that the flip phone returns because then people won't have the camera technology on their cell phone.
Probably if flip phone returns, they probably still have all that stuff built in. It just won't have a big screen.
Are you a big Chris Rock fan?
You know, what I thought was interesting is that I've always liked him. He's been quiet for a while and he's been just doing little pieces. He was showing up in those
Louis C.K.
He's undeniably hilarious.
He is, yeah. I mean, did he host the Oscars or the Grammys? He hosted one of the biggest. He hosted one of the awards.
He had that show, Everybody Hates Chris, or whatever it was.
Yeah,
he wasn't in it.
No, he was an executive producer, yeah.
It was really supposed to be like inspired by the story of his childhood kind of thing. And so he's been doing a lot of things. It's not like he's not been doing anything. It's just not been in front of our faces doing movies.
It's interesting.
Maybe this is a big reentry. I don't know.
But now that he's back and I saw the movie trailer and I read the article that you sent me, Chris Rock's still really, really funny.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like Eddie Murphy, I don't know, Eddie Murphy's older. Or, you know, Jerry Seinfeld maybe less because Jerry Seinfeld has continued to try and tour and this sort of thing. I feel a lot of that old guard have slowly been supplanted by the likes of Louis C.K. and Patton Oswalt and people like that. Chris Rock's just gone away and now he's come back again.
Louis C.K. is pretty old.
But do you know what I mean? Some people have sort of become like a TV series that's ended. Mm-hmm. They're now yesterday's news type thing. Chris Rock's just gone away, and now he's come back. He's just as funny as he was. I just find that interesting.
It's cool. Well, I don't know if I'll be going to that movie, but I'm sure I'll watch it when it comes around on cable and all that.
Yeah.
So
all right, so that's five. So we're up to our last
six geese a-laying.
I didn't have anything yet because I didn't. I'm like geese are laying. I'm thinking another game reference. I mean, I hate to say it. Back in the old days, Christmas shopping was both less imaginative but also easier. I got you a duck last year. This year I'm going to get you a partridge. The year after that I'm going to get you a goose. Then 4 years after that I can just go back and buy you a duck again because last year I gave you a goose and the year before that I gave you a partridge. So I had absolutely nothing with, another game bird.
It's an interesting point. Like with all the choices we have on
Christmas
the internet
must have sucked
like
in the old days because it's just the same crap that you're getting.
You get a turtleneck. What? I mean, you get a red turtleneck or whatever. Sure. Well, I mean, you get a shirt. You get something like it was basic, but I'm thinking of like the 50. You know, you go to a department store, they've got three choices of a thing. You get one of them, and it's, you know, you're done. So now it's like, think about it. You know, everybody talks about the shift to internet shopping because you have all those choices. Well, it's because it's a lot, as long as that many choices are out there in the marketplace, which they're in the mall too. It's easier to do it on a computer than I don't want to spend all – because when you spend your time shopping, it's not just about the line. It's about the fact that you spend all day walking from rack to rack going,
it's a hassle.
Which one? Well, if I can just put on a computer all the pictures of the things on a screen, that's a lot easier than me having to walk from place to place.
I understand that Christmas is all about giving. Christmas is about giving, and that's great. But long-time listeners of the show will know that I at heart am a minge bag. So – with everyone
I just think this whole premise that you're giving gifts is kind of
yeah. With everyone out there busy giving, then clearly you need people to give gifts to. I'm more than happy to concede the giving responsibility and be the person that gifts are given to. So the rest of you can fulfill your Christmas spirit and be all about giving. I'm more than happy to take on the rather sucky job of receiving all the gifts. Because you know something? That's a lot less hassle than going to the store, going to the, trying to park your car and all that nonsense. Yep. I think it must have been, again, in the old days, it all would have been a lot easier. I did have some thoughts about geese, though.
Yeah.
But why don't you
my geese item is because of the fact of where we live here by the lake.
Tastes like chicken.
So we have geese that come and
actually
go.
Actually, tastes more like duck. Like
so there's a whole thing about geese. Is basically, once upon a time, geese were a migratory species. Yep. They were born in Canada. They came down with the weather. They went back up. There are geese that still do that.
I don't think they refer to themselves as Canadian, though. They don't know that we live in Canada and we're going to America. They're just flying.
Yeah, but they're called Canadian geese. I mean, they didn't refer themselves as geese either. So, you know, if we can really bring it that far. Is that supposed to sound like geese?
That's a Canadian geese. Okay. Because it's
wah. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
It's like an accent.
Because the southern geese is wah.
See? All right. Yeah. Moving on. So Canadian geese, they would go and they come down. Apparently, what happened is, people would hunt the geese.
Yeah.
Game, and it would, you had to time it when they would come by. Well, if you wanted to get the geese to land where you were, you could catch some geese and like have them there.
What do you mean catch them? You mean like so pin them to the ground?
Yeah. You'd capture geese.
Okay.
And then they say apparently in the old days you'd tie it down or you clip their wings so they couldn't fly. You'd have them there and the geese would be flying over. And
they'd go, because they're like, there's Dave.
It's like basically a live decoy.
There's Dave. Come down. Let me see what he's up to.
Thing. So between that and various things. So even though the geese started in Canada and they come back
everyone's
and
pulled over here, this must be a good place to get a snack.
What they really do is return to the spot they were born. So then once –
like salmon.
Yeah. So once geese started getting born in different locations – they didn't go back up to Canada after the next thing. No, but then they sort of stopped migrating. So what they have is what they call resident geese issues, where basically they're non-migratory. Because they're born in an environment that isn't a different temperature, they don't have to go anywhere.
Oh, wow.
They don't have to leave from here to go somewhere else.
As someone who's a resident alien, I find this fascinating.
Right. So the I skipped over a step because apparently, like, geese are all over the place. I mean, people see Canadian geese all over now. I mean, just tons of them. But apparently in the early 60s, they were nearly extinct because of people hunting them. And so then there was these laws, the migratory
bird laws.
Yeah. I forget what it is. But it was to restrict hunting to a certain level. So now – but you've already set up these resident populations, and now what started happening is they're like pigeons. They're everywhere. They just keep – growing populations, and then they become a problem in certain places when they're just living in people's backyards or on golf courses or things like that. So people have gradually been trying to work out a way to kind of winnow them out in a nice way. I mean, they of course could hunt them all or something like that, but that's all still restricted. But what you can do is reduce their nesting, make sure they move on. They don't just stay where they're supposed to be. And so there's this thing called Geesepeace. It's a website, geesepeace.org.
Yep.
It was apparently founded here in our backyard, basically.
Oh, okay.
Like, so it was somebody came up with this program so that the geese would not stick around all year round. It's now everywhere. Australia, England, they use this program. It's a nonprofit now that, like, develops this program and interfaces with the different people trying to figure out how to move the geese along. Of course, they all move on to somewhere else, like a golf course.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I'm gonna attack a geese piece. I know they're all into saving animals and everything, but that's actually very selfish. Because all you're doing is actually just moving the trash that you don't want and dumping it somewhere else. It's much preferable if you just take them out with a shotgun. Then you are solving the problem.
Well, they do something. What they do is they
just say, it's like, oh, I've got all this stuff. Let me dump it off at Eric's house. Yes, I may have tidied up my area, but I've made your area more.
It's illegal. So, it's illegal to shoot them like that. So what they actually do is when the geese have eggs, you can.
I'm going to challenge a geese piece representative to come in here and debate this.
No, you're not permitted to do that because I'm a very big geese piece fan.
Oh, you are?
I'm a volunteer for geese piece here on the lake. And so I'm all in favor of
it. Oh, but yeah, but you know something? Why are you
putting the boot in on me?
I'm going to put the boot into you now then. Why are you moving the goose on? The geese, you're moving them on because they're pooping everywhere.
Uh-huh.
So when you moved them on and, yeah, I'm saving the animals and we're not going to take them out, we're going to shoo them away. You shoo them away to another neighborhood and they're just pooping all over that neighborhood.
No, they're going to move on. They start migrating again.
So this is like some sort of, like, I don't know, Cuban refugee boat that can't land anywhere. You just keep – it's like that big barge full of trash in New York that you just keep kicking down the line. Did you know how expensive it is? You can actually get – I've had a job where I've had to protect open areas from geese.
Mm-hmm.
I'm serious. And for some reason, we weren't able to have a dog, which is what most golf courses do. They just have dogs, and they let the dogs run around, and that keeps the geese from, you know, taking a dump all over the greens and everything. You can actually get systems of boxes that you set up, and they send out sort of sonic waves, and you just put the box down and plug it in somewhere, and it'll send out sonic waves that will deter the geese from landing in an open area. Because as you say, once one lands, everyone else goes, oh yeah, I'm going to land there too. And then you've got a goose or a geese problem.
Hmm. Apparently what they also don't like is laser pointers. There's a whole bunch of YouTube videos which if you just shine a laser pointer on the ground around them, they just start moving away from it.
Really? But I think anyone that flies is like that. Pilots are always complaining about that. I mean, I think that's one of the things for being here. But again, these machines are very expensive. It's like $3,000 for this sonic machine. But it is a way, if you're a park ranger or you look after sports fields or you look after a golf course, it is a way to keep your area.
I suspect it's a scam.
Geese free. No. It's through. I looked it up online. It's like $3,500 for a system. So it is expensive. Again, a dog and a shotgun, a lot easier.
Yeah.
Plus, you can eat it for Christmas.
Yeah. Well, so what they do is they add all the eggs so that they don't have more geese.
So in other words, what do you mean?
What we can do is when an egg is first laid and hasn't really turned into a goose yet, is you can coat it in oil and it won't end up being a goose.
Oh.
And so now the geese you have kind of
again, and now as a geese piece representative, I'm going to challenge you on this. Isn't that murder?
No, because there's no goose in there yet.
Where's a goose egg?
It's just an egg, though. It's not fertilized, not growing.
Oh, don't get this. There's going to be a whole group of people listening to this who are going to be firing off on the website about your position.
We'll just decide. Really? What website is that going to be?
The landingvoice.net.
Oh, yes, yes, I'm sure they'll be all over it.
Please call and comment on the blog. Yeah. No, most people who comment on the blog just take a shot at me.
Yeah. More appropriate. You can go to geesepeace.org and take a look.
Give them the business.
Highly humane program.
All right. I just feel you're dumping trash somewhere else. So there you go. That's the first 6 days of the 12 days of Christmas. So that's are we ready to?
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
This is part one. Part two will be out in a couple of weeks. In between, we'll be re-releasing an old Christmas special.
Yeah, do you know which one?
Find out.
It's going to be songs. I mean, you could go look. It's going to be songs or movies or something like that, right?
Basically, longtime fans and listeners, we're going to just dump up stuff so that at Christmas, as you're driving around to grandma's house or you're stuck there with the family and you just want to get away from it all and put on your headphones, you can listen to us.
Which, by the way, even though we're re-releasing, you could actually go back and listen to them yourself. So we should mention that when we re-release
them. Yeah, just go to the blog, like, hunt back for December's, yeah, and just find Christmas specials. But we got a couple of hours. But anyway, we'll do part two. We'll do the rest of the 12 Days of Christmas in our next episode.
All right, till then.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.